Bird's Eye View is a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Find more podcasts like this at BaltimoreSportsReport.com. BaltimoreSportsReport.com.
Welcome back to Bird's Eye View. When it comes to the Orioles, this weekly podcast is your official source for lack of insight and for baseless opinion. Today is September 9th, 2013, and this is episode 52. My name is Jake English, and here, as always, I'm going to be shown up again and again by Scott Magnus. Now, if you're hearing my voice, you're most likely listening to us at birdseyeviewbaltimore.com, but you can also find us at the BaltimoreSportsReport.com/network, as we are a proud member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network, along with our other sister wives programs, as Sam Dingman of Baltimoreans would say. You can hear us on iTunes, but Scott, I believe there are also some other places around the web that you can listen to the show.
Sure, you can follow us at other locations such as Miro, Stitcher, Double Twist, Creamsicle, Rapper's Delight,
I would think by now that you would have some ready for each show.
He's just made a word, so.
All right.
Ice cream sandwich.
In addition to that, you can also catch up with us on Facebook at facebook.com/BEVcast and follow us on Twitter at BirdseyeViewBAL.
That's where you can get all our witty commentary throughout the week.
I think witty is setting the bar pretty high.
Okay, it's just 140 characters of mindless dribble.
It's sarcasm and occasional anger at 140 characters at a time.
So snark?
Yeah, I would go with snark.
Okay.
Okay, Scott, that brings us to your and my favorite segment of the week, which is?
The drink of the week.
All right, Scott, what is your drink of the week?
Mountain Dew.
Excuse me?
Mountain Dew.
I'm just, what? What?
Just Mountain Dew tonight.
Okay, you mock me week after week after week for my choices, and you don't even bring an alcoholic beverage for drink of the week?
Hi, my name is Scott Magnus, and I have a problem.
You certainly do. When you get shown up with a drink of the week by me, it's a sad day, sir.
Yeah, look, I'm starting a program. I'm going to see what happens. They serve free coffee. It sounds like a pretty good deal to me.
All right, myself, I'm drinking... All right, this is not much better. I'm drinking a red wine, a Malbec by Cigar Box, a fine product out of Argentina, which is, I think, the best wine you can get for $14.
Oh, okay, $14. I thought it was going to be $8.
And that concludes the drink of the week.
Because nothing makes you want to drink something that says Cigar Box. I mean, I could think of many things that I would want to drink that tastes just like a Cigar Box.
You know, when I see a Cigar Box, I think to myself, I would love to drink that right now.
Yeah.
It's actually a good wine. I like it. I'm a big fan. All right, so sad drink of the week aside, that now will bring us to
the best part of this show, which is the Brian Roberts watch.
The Brian Roberts watch. I say it's the best part of the show, but...
That's the best part of the show.
I'm not sure this is the best Brian Roberts watch we've had.
No, it's not, but it's the best part of the show. It just shows you how poor the rest of the show is.
You're going to chase people away. They're going to listen to the first couple minutes and click...
People listen?
Yeah, I actually don't even know what the click was. Like, I'm not sure what device you would be listening to this podcast on where you would click and it would make it stop.
Yeah.
This is good podcasting right here. So Brian Roberts had 28 at-bats in this particular last seven-day stretch, and he collected 4 hits. That's a 143 average, 250 on the OBP, slugging. This is where it gets interesting. Slugging at 429. You can't say a whole lot good about Brian Roberts right now, but the one thing I will say is that you're starting to see some power return. He hit 2 home runs, he hit 2 doubles. The old Brian Roberts could occasionally flash the power. The new Brian Roberts, I would like to see him get on base, but at least for this week, it was a nice display of a little bit of oomph.
Are we touting a 429 slugging percentage?
No.
Okay.
I'm doing my best to put a rosy disposition on an otherwise ugly Brian Roberts watch.
Okay, understandable.
Will you give me this? Will you at least give me this?
No. But here's my question. You went through his stats, 250 on base percentage. Why was Brian Roberts leading off?
Because we didn't have anybody else that could do it. Mm. The Orioles have gone, and I think we'll talk about this a little bit later, but the Orioles have gone from having a plethora of leadoff candidates to almost none.
See, I don't see how Brian Roberts is an ideal leadoff candidate right now if he's only getting on base.
Oh, he's not ideal. The time. He's not ideal, but he's no more ideal than Markakis has been, or McLouth has been, or anybody.
Well, what about Danny Valencia?
Stop it with that. All right, so the Brian Roberts watch.
Well, I'm not done with Brian Roberts. I'm going to give you a beacon of hope.
All right, please. I need a beacon of hope.
Okay, I'm going to give you a beacon of hope. Okay, at the plate, there really hasn't been anything productive for him to say, okay, look what I've done in addition to these other batters. But the one thing that I've noticed is he does take a lot of pitches up there as leadoff hitter. So for the week, he's taken 168 pitches, which is 30 pitches better than any other batter on the Baltimore Orioles.
It kind of sounds like 30 pitches better than the whole rest of the lineup.
Well, no, it's just any other batter. But in comparison to Manny Machado, he is 50 pitches better for the entire week.
Well, you've hit me in my soft underbelly because I'm tired of watching Manny Machado swing at that first pitch.
So Brian Roberts is going up there and at least staying up there long enough to allow other batters to see the pitcher, but also making the pitcher work. So to that, I tip my cap to you. But seriously, get on base!
Absolutely. All right, Brian Roberts with a very oof-worthy week. That'll bring us to the next segment, which is the medical wing. Scott, would you care to take a stroll through the medical wing?
Sure. Nolan Reimold, still done.
He gone.
He gone. Steve Pierce, still having issues with his wrist. It certainly seems to me the talk that they're basically indicating is that Steve will not be back for the rest of the season.
I don't know. I read that he had an injection. They're hoping he'll come back soon, but I may just be...
I've heard that talk before, yeah.
Much ado about nothing.
Yeah.
You know what they say. It is
all in the wrist.
All in the wrist.
Jason Hamill returned to the Orioles and pitched a bullpen session on Sunday. Great.
I think that is good. He actually pitched an effective outing out of the bullpen.
So, better than TJ McFarland?
Yes.
Okay.
And right now, when every out of every game matters, I will take anybody who can get outs.
Okay. Now, here's my question for you. What would happen if Jason Hamill grew a mustache?
Oof. I'm going to be honest, I don't think that Jason Hamill can carry a mustache.
I think this is a challenge that Jason Hamill needs to take on. It's either that or Nate McLouth growing a mustache.
Didn't he have like the under goatee with no mustache? Wasn't that his look for a while?
I believe so.
I don't think Jason Hamill can carry a mustache.
Maybe we could just like color one in.
I think he would be unstoppable as a mustachioed reliever. All right, so Jason Hamill is walking among us yet again.
Well, I mean, that's great that he's back in the bullpen. The fact of the matter is, we'll have to see how he does as he continues. The other question is, does he actually work himself back into the starting rotation?
Well, I mean, if we're going to have other, you know, starters that falter, it's nice to have a guy like Hamill in the wings who can step up, hopefully.
Right. With that, I think it's time to take a break. We'll come back, and I want to talk about, well, some business that needs to be taken care of.
Are there going to be numbers involved?
There's going to be numbers involved, and I need to get into a shirt and have it be only in my underwear. So we'll be right back. Curious on why you didn't ask any questions about the sunglasses. You know who I got the sunglasses from, right?
I'm used to you wearing sunglasses at night. I'm not used to the rest of the getup.
Well, look, I like to look good right before I invite a prostitute over to my house and get it on with her.
You're like business up top, party in the bottom.
I'm always partying the bottom.
All right, let's get serious.
All right, let me get some pants back on. Actually, do you mind if I just go pantsless for the rest of this episode?
Would it make a difference if I said no?
No, so I'm just going to go pantsless for the rest of this episode.
So, we are here to talk about the squiggly markings that aren't letters.
Go on.
Someone mentioned that there would be numbers involved.
Yes, numbers.
All right, I think that's my cue to leave.
No, I mean, I think we need to talk about the inherent issue right now with the Baltimore Orioles for the past, well, the past series at least, and that's the inability to get runners in from scoring position.
I would argue that it's been the last several series.
Okay, that's fine. It seems to be a situation where when the Orioles have needed that clutch hit, we have not been able to get that clutch hit. See, on Saturday, we were able to get that clutch hit. Finally. The fact of the matter is, the Orioles went, what was it, 5-for-37 or something like that for the entire Chicago White Sox series. It was an abomination, needless to say. So my question is, big deal, so what, who cares? Jake, what is your baseless opinion on this matter?
I think it's terrible.
Okay.
I think that the troubles that they're having...
We won 3 out of 4.
I think the troubles that they're having with runners in the scoring position are a real problem, because you're not going to get lucky every night. You know, the 2012 Orioles, they could get lucky, and they could ruin so many opportunities and then finally get that last one. 2013 Orioles are a little more straight up in the karma department. You know, they're a little less in the clutch statistic, if you will. And so leaving a bunch of runners in scoring position is going to be a problem for this club. And you saw that in all the series that they dropped before you got to the Chicago White Sox. You know, the Tampa series, the Cleveland series. It just goes on and on about the Orioles putting men on base, getting them into scoring position, and then having unproductive outs, having poor at-bats, stringing together poor at-bats, to the point in which it's incredibly frustrating for the team. It's incredibly frustrating for the fans.
You're absolutely right. This is frustrating for Orioles fans that, you know, we claimed to expect last year those clutch hits time and time again. And the fact of the matter is, when you're playing a team like the Chicago White Sox, you expect to, well, no offense, blow them out. And the fact of the matter is, the Orioles had plenty of chances with runners on base, plenty of hits, plenty of errors on the chances of the White Sox as well. So you had plenty of people left on base. Just was the fact of the matter of there wasn't really a lot of productive outs. There was also the fact that you had a lot of base running miscues. And you also had the situation where, you know, the heart of your lineup really didn't contribute a lot during those games. Brian Roberts, Manny Machado, Chris Davis, and Adam Jones really just never could get that clutch hit and put batters in. It was an utter team failure this weekend. My question kind of rattles in my head is, what can you do about it, though?
Well, I mean, I think clearly it goes back to the fact that the Orioles are pressing. You know, they can feel the pressure. You know, last year there was no expectation. They were in the driver's seat because they were a threat that nobody expected. Here in 2013, there are expectations from the fans, of the team itself, of the rest of the league. They have a target on their back. And so here they are, you know, 2.5 games, 3.5, you know, 2 games back from the wild card, and they know that they have to win these games. And you can definitely see it on their faces. I mean, when Chris Davis strikes out, you can see it all over him. You know, when Adam Jones strikes out, you can see it just wash over him, the disappointment, the frustration. And I think that it's just getting to the point where they're starting to choke because they're pressing so hard. Adam Jones said the other day, and possibly not the most calm manner to the media, you know, we're getting ourselves in this position. We're getting a lot of people on base. We're creating those opportunities. Would you rather us not create the opportunities?
Right.
And he's got a point to an extent. I'm glad that they're, you know, putting themselves in a position to be dangerous. They just need to go through with it. They need to execute at least a couple times. I mean, if you're 0-for-19 or whatever in a game for runners in scoring position, that's just abject failure.
Yeah. I know Orioles fans hate to hear this, but again, if you've heard it through all their social media commentary, and I'm sure you've heard it through various other channels, but the Orioles are 6th in Major League Baseball with runners in scoring position. But I wanted to break the numbers out further and look at where the Orioles could be struggling right now.
You're right, by the way. I do hate hearing that.
Yeah. The one thing I want to point out, though, is even though they're 6th in Major League Baseball with runners in scoring position, they're 17th in Major League Baseball with runners in scoring position with 2 outs.
Okay.
Which I find interesting that you're not able to continue a 2-out rally. I think that's a major deal to me. The fact of the matter is you can only get runs when you only have one out. The fact of the matter is a lot of these times last year you had several two-out rallies where the Orioles were able to score two or three runs, which I thought were key contributions last year.
If you're getting into the double digits of leaving runners in the scoring position, though, that also points to the fact that you're getting a leadoff double or something, and you're getting a runner in scoring position and having several opportunities right. in the same inning and failing to execute. And I think that's the most frustrating for me. If you get a leadoff double and you feel like there's no chance that you're going to score because it wasn't a home run, that's a really depressing feeling.
Right. The other thing I wanted to point out, too, was a similar category, was bases loaded. The Orioles are 17th in average right now in Major League Baseball with the bases loaded. Their average isn't bad. I think it's right around 280. But the fact of the matter is, it's right in the middle there. And again, it's below middle, where a bunch of other playoff teams like the Red Sox and the Athletics and the Rays are hitting well above that. Again, is it a big deal? I don't know. Still, the fact of the matter is you're sixth in running and runners in scoring position, but the fact that that's contributed with runners in scoring position with two outs makes me question the aspect of, you know, is this a contributing cause to the Orioles' failures? I wanted to dig deeper, though. I wanted to go back to our fantasy stat for last week, which was batting average for balls in play.
Don't spoil it.
I'm not going to spoil it. But currently, the Orioles are 8th in batting average in the league. And you would say, oh, that's pretty darn good. But they're 23rd in batting average with balls put in play. Yeah, I mean, that's not that great. I mean,
it's showing that once they're putting the ball in play, they're not getting a whole lot out of it.
Right.
And that's... it's a killer. You know, it's an absolute killer because you put all these guys on base, and if you fail to execute, you put your pitchers in a position where they feel like they have to be too fine. They feel like they have to be perfect. And when your offense sets your starting rotation up feeling like they have to be perfect, it's a absolute recipe for disaster.
Yeah, there's another stat I also want to point out, too, and that's IFFB percent. Do you know what IFFB percent means?
No, I think you just made that up.
No, I did not, actually. It's infield fly ball percentage.
Oh, I know where you're going with this one. Please, let me ruin this for you.
Go ahead.
Are you going to Nick Markakis?
No, I'm not. I'm actually just going to follow with the Orioles.
What? How could you talk about infield pop-ups without talking about Nick Markakis? Okay, before you get to your numbers, I have a number that I read somewhere and can't remember exactly, but...
why am I surprised?
I read that he was somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, one... for every 15 at-bats was a pop-up or something like that.
Yeah, that does sound fairly familiar.
An infield pop-up. That's... boy. Okay, please continue. I'll shut up.
But the Orioles are fifth right now in infield fly ball percentage. Now, that being said, the A's and the Yankees are right there in the top five with them. So I was just like, okay, that's an interesting stat. But the one thing that actually interests me more is O-swing percentage. Now, do you know what O-swing percentage is, Jake?
Swing percentage by Orioles? O's,
no.
If you will?
It's a swing that is outside the strike zone.
Okay. I'm going to hear you out here.
Yes.
But I do want to say that I struggle with the concept of that stat, because swinging outside of the strike zone can be an effective strategy.
That's correct. We've already discussed this before with Adam Jones being...
and Chris Davis.
We can talk about Chris Davis a little bit later. But you're right. We've talked about Adam Jones being one of the more prototypical bad ball hitters currently in baseball. But my question is, yes, he's getting on base. Yes, he's hitting for average. Yes, he's hitting for home runs. And yes, he's hitting for RBIs. But if he was more consistent in the plate and drawing more pitches, would they do better? So right now, the Orioles are seventh in the league in outside swing percentage. And here's my problem with this is if you look at the individuals that are in that top category, they're flanked right there by the Astros and the Cubs.
Oh, those are good clubs.
Yeah.
Not this year.
Right.
But, you know, good
clubs. There really is no other playoff teams in that top 10. You've got teams like the Rockies, the Angels, stuff like that. So you've got perennial bottom dwellers. I think the Angels are in there, too, because, again, they're swinging at everything. They've got some great players in their hitting, but they're swinging at everything. So my question would be, if you're going to swing at everything and you're going to swing outside the zone, can that eventually come back and hurt you? And in my opinion, it actually can come back and hurt you when we're talking about runners in scoring position here. If you're going to constantly swing outside the zone, you're going to have the ability to, again, not put the ball in play into a situation where you can get on base or drive runs in. But you also have the issue, too, where you might have an infield fly ball as well. You can also have a higher amount of strikeouts as well. I'm also going to point out a discussion on sabermetrics at the past conference last year. Again, there's a sabermetrics conference every single year at the end of the year, right during baseball winter meetings. And there was a discussion had about this offensive swing percentage and also a Z swing percentage or a Z contact percentage, which actually is a swing and contact within the strike zone. And what it actually found was that there is a direct correlation between Z contact percentage, so making contact within the strike zone, and an increase in batting average per balls in play, which kind of makes sense. That means you're making better contact with a ball that's in play. So you're not stretching out and trying to make a hit out of something. You're showing good plate discipline.
Usually I think that all these voodoo stats are crap, but I can see the correlation between that. You swing at a better ball, you're going to get a better result.
Right.
That's basically what it comes down to.
Correct. That also helped to lower the infield fly ball percentage as well, because, again, you had a greater possibility of making a decent contact with the ball.
Two quick points.
Yes.
I think that one of the things you'll see from the clubs that have that high infield fly percentage is clubs that live and die by the home run. You know, the Orioles have how many hitters now that have hit 20-plus home runs? You have guys taking those big cuts, and when you just miss them, a lot of times that's what happens.
Okay.
You know, they goes up rather than goes down. So I think that as an identity leads to that. But I absolutely see what you're saying about swinging at bad pitches leads to a bad result. And we're seeing that manifest itself in one way, in the pop-ups. You know, the thing about not swinging good pitches is that you're not forcing opposing pitchers to throw good pitches. And you're really setting yourself up for failure. Now, we always laugh about Adam Jones. The formula is throw a low and away slider when it's 0-2 and you're out of the at-bat. But if the entire lineup, you know, kind of gets that identity, you can see how opposing pitchers are going to start pitching even more effectively to the Orioles, and how these runners in scoring position issues can just multiply.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about this in the past, and I think this is a pretty known fact. The fact of the matter is, the individuals in our division, the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees, have known great plate discipline. They're one of the individuals that, you know, generate more walks for their teams, which gets more people on base, which gives the ability to score more runs. The fact of the matter is, plate discipline is hurting the Baltimore Orioles, both in terms of making solid contact with the ball, but also with getting men on base. My question is, do the Orioles need to be a little bit more patient in their approach at the plate?
Yes.
Okay.
Hang on.
Yes, okay. They do.
And the one thing I'll point out is we have now completed Monday's night's game against the New York Yankees, and the Orioles have been victorious 4-2 over the New York Yankees against CC Sabathia. And in my opinion, watching this game, the Baltimore Orioles displayed a great amount of plate discipline, more so than they have ever shown with CC Sabathia.
They worked him.
Yes.
And the other thing about Sabathia is that they have an approach against that. They have a game plan that works. I think he's now 0-5 in the last few starts against the Orioles, where he has a decision. And, you know, Buck floods the lineup with guys that have weird success off of him, like Alexi, I can't turn a double play, Casilla. And they go after him in these methodical team at-bats, and they put an entire lineup on him. And this is what happens. We've seen it with Sabathia, who used to be, at least, one of the best pitchers in the league. Why can't we do that against some kid from Chicago?
Right. Now, the one thing I'll point out, too, is coming back to this plate discipline aspect, is I go back and think about ALDS game number 1 and game number 5. Yes, I'm going back there. But the fact of the matter is, the Orioles were prevalent first-pitch swingers through that series against Sabathia. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is, Sabathia was able to throw complete games almost for both those games. And oftentimes, the Orioles were first-pitch swinging, where Sabathia was able to get out of that game with less than 100 pitches.
Yeah.
This is just a simple situation of, if you're going to show some plate discipline, show your plate discipline, and you're going to, you know, it's going to show benefits throughout the lineup, especially against veterans like CC Sabathia. Now, if that individual is always throwing you constant first-pitch strikes, you're going to have to be a little bit more aggressive at the plate.
Right. Again, sometimes that is the game plan. And we don't claim to have inside information. You know, that you have the advanced scouts that work on pitchers, on starting rotations, et cetera. And they may come to you and say, look, they throw 73% first ball strikes, you need to be swinging. And, you know, 83% of those are fastballs. So you need to be looking fastball for the first pitch, and you need to drill it. And sometimes that's what happens. But over several series now, and I keep complaining about it with Manny, but over several series now, I think you're seeing that they're not taking patient at-bats. And so, yes, Scott, I wholeheartedly agree with you that the answer to the RISP problem is to slow down, have more team at-bats, have a focus for that at-bat. What is the most important thing I can do here? Is it move the runner on? Is it get a ball into the outfield? Is it get a hit at all costs? Choke up on the bat, poke one into right field instead of trying to hook it. I'm not seeing a lot of that from the Orioles right now, and as a result, not seeing a whole lot of runs.
So you're advising the Orioles to give a different type of psychology or mentality at the plate when there are runners in scoring position?
Well, no. I mean, it's a good approach for all the time, but especially with runners in scoring position, which is when they're pressing the most.
All right. Jake English has just advised Chris Davis to choke up on the bat.
Not just on the bat.
Okay. I just wanted to point out that you just said choke up on the bat. Everybody choke up on the bat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. My advice to the Baltimore Orioles is don't do anything differently than what you're doing, except be a little bit more play disciplined and take a few more pitches.
So don't do anything different except everything.
No. I said don't change your swing approach or anything like that, and don't say, oh, I'm going to hit it to the right side or anything like that. You're a professional batter. You know what to do. You can see what opportunities are out there, but take another pitch.
Whoa.
It's just like a fantasy draft where, you know, if you think you should be taking a quarterback in the fourth round, wait one round and take a quarterback in the fifth round. And by the way, Jake, how did you do this week against my wife?
First of all, they are not all professional hitters. Have you seen Mike Morse at Camden Yards?
We'll get back to Mike Morse. But second point, how did my wife beat you by 70 points this week?
She made me her bitch.
Okay, I just want to make sure. How did that feel, by the way?
I'm used to it when it comes to fantasy football.
Well, what can I say? Team Magnus took it to Team English this weekend.
They did indeed.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, I think we're going to take a quick break. And let's just say the race is on.
I'm going to rev my engines a little bit.
That's right. Damn it, monkey, get out of the trunk!
Here he comes. Here comes Speed Racer, he's a demon on wheels. He's a demon and he's gonna be chasing after someone. He's gaining on you, so you better look alive. He's busy revving up the powerful Mach 5. And when the odds are against him and there's dangerous work to do, bet your life, Speed Racer, see it through.
That's right, folks. The race has gotten tighter. Yes, of course, we're talking about the hot dog race at Camden Yards with ketchup, Team Ketchup, that is, the best condiment of all. Now in second place to Relish, the fascist overlord of all the condiments. So, oh, wait, we're not talking about the hot dog race.
No, although I am wholeheartedly hashtag Team Ketchup.
Yes.
No, we speak, of course, about the AL wildcard race, though the Orioles are, at this moment, as we record, on the evening of September 9th, 9 games out of the AL East. They are but a mere game and a half out of the second wildcard race, and this race has gotten extraordinarily tight. So you've got the Texas Rangers on top, 3 games up for that first wildcard spot. The Tampa Bay Rays clutching narrowly to that second wild card slot, and you've got the Orioles and the Cleveland Indians 1.5 games back, but wait, right behind are the New York Yankees, and hey, the Kansas City Royals, who I believe I picked to make the playoffs in the preseason predictions, 4 games out of the wild card race. It's a fantastic AL wild card chase, and the Orioles they're right there.
Yeah, they're right there. But the whole thing is, though, you look at the other teams that they're playing against. Let's look at the Indians, for example. They've got one of the easiest schedules in order to get there. They play the Royals and they play the White Sox and a combination of all other crappy teams. So it just looks like they're going to be able to walk right in and take one of those wild card spots.
Scott, the Orioles have nothing left but the AL East. They're going to play the Red Sox. They're going to play the Blue Jays. They're going to play the Rays. They're going to play the Yankees. And frankly, if they can't beat those teams to make it into the playoffs, they wouldn't go anywhere in the playoffs anyway. Right?
Damn your logic.
I know. It's beyond excuse time. It's pay up or shut up. And right now, the Orioles are in a critical position where they can overcome that game-and-a-half deficit, and they can prove their mettle against the teams that matter most. Now, here with 19 games left, or maybe we're at 18 games left at this point, we're out of There's Always Tomorrow. Now, we have to be careful because we're not going to win all the games. We're not going to go, you know, 18-0. That's not going to happen. So we can't freak out over every loss. But at the same time, we have to look each loss right in the eye and say, what can we do tomorrow to not let this happen again?
Okay. I mean, I just think we should just win the rest of the games. I think that'd make it a lot easier.
I think it would make it a lot easier, too, but it's just not going to happen.
Okay, but the point of the matter is, you're exactly right. There are no more easier games. There's no games that you can lose. But the other thing about the schedule that I think is interesting is I have always felt this whole season that the Orioles have always played better against these harder teams than they have against some of these weaker teams. I'm looking at teams such as Boston, who've gone 7-6 against. I'm looking at Detroit, who they went 4-2 against. I'm looking at the Dodgers, 2-1. The Yankees, 8-7. Oakland, 5-2. Tampa Bay is the only team they've actually played bad against, and that's 6-9. This is a team... Oh, and Texas, 5-2. This is a team that likes to go against tough competition. This is a team that likes to go out there and go against the best of the best. This is a team that likes to get fired up and know that this is who they want to go against. And the fact of the matter is, Adam Jones has even said, all we have to do is win. Everything's in front of us. If we win, we're going to the playoffs. What better position could you want to be in at this moment than to basically write your own destiny?
He's right. And the thing is that, you know, we keep saying these 2013 Orioles aren't the 2012 Orioles. That's a problem. But at the same time, those 2013 Orioles do have a resume. They have a resume of playing well against the good clubs. And yes, they're frustrating against the dregs, you know, against the Astros and the White Sox, etc. But they can beat the good teams, and I think they just might. All right, so I'm actually optimistic at this point.
What?
Yeah, I'm actually optimistic. We're back in the wild card race. You know, we have games in front of us that are winnable. We've got a real path to the playoffs. So let me ask you, Scott, we just won a series, which is what we need to do from here on out. Are you satisfied with 3 of 4 from Chicago?
No.
Come again for Big Fudge?
No.
Why? Why are you unsatisfied with winning 3 of 4 games?
I think we should have won the game on Sunday. It's as simple as that. I think that, again, it comes back to the fact of the matter is you've had poor, you know, hitting with runners in scoring position, poor base running. It just seemed like a game that was within grasp, but the Orioles could never get that clutch hit. I even come back to that ninth inning with Ryan Flaherty hitting the drive down the right field line, and it just barely going foul. It just seemed like this game was so close the entire time to being an Orioles win, and yet we blew it. So, no, I'm not pleased that the Orioles were only able to take 3 of 4. Am I disappointed by it? Yes. Am I devastated by it? No.
Look, they just need to win series. They really do. They need to win series. I don't think this club is built to go, you know, 9 of 10 to put an 8-game winning streak together. But frankly, I don't think they need to get to where they need to go to win a wild card berth.
I think
especially with the teams that are in front of them.
Okay, I think it's going to be close to that. I think you're basically going to have to take every single series, and I just don't see us taking every single series.
All right.
So you're basically saying the only way that we're going to win is for us to take every single series from now on.
Just about.
Okay, that's fine. I think that's the only way that you're going to win as well. So if we lose a series, it's over, folks.
I don't know if I'm ready to do that. Look at that elimination column, and you will see that the Orioles are well away from being off.
Okay, the next time you start with that, look to the elimination column. I want you to start it in a limerick, okay? So try to work on that next time.
I'll get right on that.
Speaking of limericks and singing, we're going to go to our next segment, which is Fantasy Boss.
When it comes to twisting, I just got to keep insisting. Oh, baby, you sure do swing.
When it comes to twisting, I just got to keep insisting on daddy. Hey, you are the king.
Baby, you've got me beat up and down, inside out and across. Oh, yeah.
But in the middle of the night, when the moon is shining bright, you're the boss.
Well, Jake, it's Fantasy Boss time.
Yeah, I know. Do you remember when you said that you basically have to run the table to make a go at this thing?
Yeah, I still don't think I can win.
Can you stop running the table? It's really starting to piss me off. First, if your wife is going to beat me at fantasy football, that's one thing. But if I'm going to have to, again, take a loss in Fantasy Boss for our podcast, my pride can only take so much.
Ooh, baby.
You know, when you were singing because I had beaten you, it was one thing.
Yeah.
When you're singing out of mockery, it doesn't taste the same.
No, it doesn't.
It just doesn't taste the same.
Especially when I'm wiggling and jiggling. So, going back, we picked BABIP, which is batting average with batters with balls in play.
Babip.
You picked Manny Machado, who had a 200 average. And I had Chris Davis, who had a 340 average. So... that means I'm the winner. The score now is 6-3.
Ta-da!
So, Jake, I decided to pick a new category for this week. I decided to go with O swing percentage. Who's going to have the highest O swing percentage for this team in the next 7 days?
All right. So let me go back. O swing percentage is swing percentage of balls that are outside of the strike zone?
Yes.
So who's going to be the biggest chaser?
Yes.
Adam Jones.
Okay. Jake is going with Adam Jones. I'm going with Michael Morse.
Oh, man. I think you just won again. Oh, all right. So, in the immortal words of Masson Promos,
who will own it? And the Fantasy Boss segment is brought to us by our sponsor for the Baltimore Sports Report Network, FanDuel. You should go there, spend your money, and try to prove that you're right, that you know more about fantasy than we do. So go make some money out there, people.
All right, so let's talk about this. So I drop money. And when I do fantasy things, that's what I do. I drop money.
Yes.
And then you play fantasy. Is it like a league? Do you do it for a long period of time?
No, you do it one time, and you play against one other person. And then whoever wins, you get that money.
So it's like small daily matches rather than a lengthy...
Yeah, it's like Battleship, but instead of saying you sunk my cruiser, you basically get to take the person's money.
I gotta be honest, I'm not sure that you should lead with it's like Battleship. Guys, it's nothing like Battleship.
It's exactly like Battleship, except Michael Morse is like a submarine.
Okay, so FanDuel.com, we're very excited about this. It's actually a pretty cool site, and again, it is a sponsor of the Baltimore Sports Report Network, and we are just thrilled to have them on board. FanDuel.com.
FanDuel.com. So go out there, register at FanDuel.com, and own it.
Do better than I would, because it's not good.
Yep. So with that, we're going to go to our next segment, which is one of my favorite segments, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yes, it's that time. It's time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. As usual, I'm going to go ahead and start so Scott can get the last word. And I'm going to start by stealing. Scott, what? I'm going to steal your good from last week.
That's not acceptable.
And I'm going to tell you that my good for this week is Scott Feldman. Scott Feldman put in a start that was noteworthy this week in a 9-inning complete game win in which he gave up how many? Oh, I'm sorry. No earned runs. Scott Feldman brought the Orioles with the rest of the league as teams who have had a complete game from a starter. Scott Feldman was really good in this start. Like I said, 9 innings, 5 hits, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts, no earned runs, no runs of any kind. And more importantly, a big bird in the win column. Scott Feldman for this week is my good.
All right, I'm going to go with an unsung hero right now for the Baltimore Orioles, and that is Danny Valencia.
Really?
Yeah. Danny Valencia hit 500 this week.
In how many at-bats?
10 at-bats.
And how is that not small sample size?
Look, given the consideration that he played predominantly against the Chicago White Sox, he was one of the key contributors out there that actually got base hits. 500 average, 1,000 slugging, and a 1.5 OPS. Dude has mad skills against left-handers.
I think that's why we got him.
I think so, too. But it's great to see someone actually being doing exactly what we purchased him for. So, Danny Valencia, tip the cap to you. Keep doing what you're doing.
All right. I will yield. He's good this week. I'm going to move over to my bad, and my bad for this week is Michael Morse. Now, I'm going to give him credit because Take On Me is a fantastic walk-up song. But Michael Morse, I think, is still 0 for Oriole Park at this point. And in this particular week, he was 1 for 10, batting a crisp 100. And that goes across the stat line until you get to OPS. Michael Morse has shown nothing at the plate. And he's certainly not a good enough defender to warrant getting in the lineup if he's not going to hit. We needed a right-handed bat at DH. He hasn't been that so far. So you are, this week, bad, Michael Morse.
All right. My bad for the week actually is going to be, I hate to say this, Manny Machado.
What?
I'm with you. I'm very frustrated with his ability to swing at the first pitch. And that's really showing by looking at his average. He's got a 200 average, 226 on base percentage, 367 slugging, and a 592 OPS. The fact of the matter is, I'm really starting to question whether or not he should be the number two batter right now in the lineup. Again, he's being very aggressive at the plate. You know, is it just bad timing, over-aggressiveness? I don't know, but I'm not liking the trend that this is going in post-All-Star break with Manny Machado. So I can't give him an ugly because, man, he plays an amazing defense. But at the same point, Manny, I'd love to see you contribute a little bit more in the number two spot. So you're not on notice, Manny, but I'm just was hoping for better.
All right, so he's bad.
He's bad.
Well, let's move on to folks that are on notice. And this week, for me, on notice is Nick Markakis. And we talked about it. We talked about it ad nauseum all season. But we gave you some details earlier, you know, popping up in the infield every 15 at-bats. Nick Markakis has done almost nothing for this club. Now, of course, tonight that I've said that, he got a double to drive in a run, and he scored a run, and all that kind of other good stuff and from the leadoff position. So, good for him. But until tonight, Nick Markakis has showed us almost nothing from the plate. And it's getting to the point where you have to start wondering, is he going to start losing at-bats? I was fully prepared to come into this podcast and talk about the fact that he needed to take a seat. We needed to see more of Michael Morse in right field. And Buck did that this weekend. Nick Markakis had 5 hits over 25 at-bats. You know, obviously a 200 average with 3 strikeouts and nothing really to show for it. Again, before tonight, no at-bats, no extra base hits, nothing. So Nick Markakis is on notice. He has been ugly this week, and hopefully, again, this Monday night game may be the turnaround for him because we're going to need him in a stretch run.
All right. I can't disagree with you.
I know.
Okay.
My logic is infallible.
Okay.
Moving on.
You want my ugly?
I do.
My ugly has to be Zach Britton.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is Zach Britton came up here with a key chance to make a contribution for this team. The fact of the matter is he fell flat on his face.
He fell so flat on his face that they demoted him in September to the minors.
Yes. I mean, that's horrific.
How pissed do you have to be at a guy to send him to the minors in September?
Very pissed off. I mean, that's just unbelievable how poor his performance was. Like you said, it was so poor, they said, we don't even want to put you back in the bullpen. You're being demoted down to the minor leagues. We're actually going to send you to Sarasota. We're not even sure if baseball is still being played in Sarasota, but we're going to send you to Sarasota.
I am so angry with you, Zach Britton. I need you to leave the city. Get out of Baltimore.
So, Zach Britton, I'd love to say you're on notice, but man, you've been given your notice. So, Zach Britton, adieu.
Pink slip. You know, his ERA was 15.43.
I'm not listening. I'm not listening. I'm not listening.
2.1 innings.
I'm not listening.
4 earned runs.
I'm not listening.
A whip of 3.43.
Okay, and here's the thing that really POs me about this whole situation is, okay, people are going to come back and say, yeah, big deal. They lost a game. But that game could be really critical. The fact of the matter is, by losing that game, the Indians took the series win, both for that series, but also took the season series win. So they basically went up 4-3 on the Orioles. So, hypothetically, if the Orioles and Indians tie for that second wild card position, we play a tiebreaker game for the second wild card position in Cleveland, and then you have to go play another wild card game afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, that also makes you wonder what Buck was thinking in bringing up Zach Britton for that start. The thing about it is that if it was such a pivotal game, as you've just correctly pointed out, why would you bring up an unproven commodity to make a pivotal start like that? I know Buck likes his guys, but this was, in my eyes, a bit of an overreach.
Definitely. I understand the aspect of trying to get rotation set up previous to that. But the fact of the matter is, you had the White Sox coming to town. I don't quite understand why the rotation could have been kept on schedule and then bumped back another game in the White Sox series to make up for it. I'd rather have Zach Britton pitching against the White Sox than the Indians. That being said, I'm not sure if it would have mattered either way, based on the way that Zach Britton was pitching. But maybe giving an extra day or two to Kevin Gausman would have been a great way to go about it, too. That being said, they did discuss Kevin Gausman, saying that he was a little tight in his arm, so he really wasn't an option as well.
He was a little tight?
Yeah, in his arm.
Oh, okay. I see.
We don't make jokes about tightness in arms, okay?
Oh, no, certainly not. Certainly not with high pitching prospects for the Orioles.
Yeah, so just...
How's that jersey working out for you, by the way?
I'm going to punch you in the face. So with that, everybody, we've got a busy week ahead of us as Orioles fans. We've got a four-game series against the Yankees in Baltimore. And based off of the attendance tonight in the stadium, it doesn't look like people got the memo yet.
The Orioles played the Yankees tonight. Again, as we mentioned, a pivotal game in the wild card race. Our heated rivals, and...
It's a beautiful night outside, too.
17,000 people showed up.
Are the Ravens playing tonight?
No. And Keith Urban is at home.
Oh, okay. So where is everybody? Where are the Yankees fans?
I have no idea. I mean, it is a Monday night and all, but still, at the stretch run for a playoff race, this is important. Go show up.
Right. I don't understand that. Go show up. Go support the Orioles. Go boo the Yankees.
Now, let's talk about something real quick that happened in Monday's game. And we don't usually cover Monday, but... I can't wait for this.
Okay.
There was a bit of a kerfuffle during this game.
A scuffaw?
Yeah, there was a... Well, it was a to-do. Apparently, Buck Showalter...
A hissy fit?
Buck Showalter and Joe Girardi went at it to the point where they had to be separated by the umpires and players. Girardi was accusing Bobby Dickerson of stealing signs. Bobby took offense. He made a comment. Comments got made back and forth. And then Buck went off.
Yeah, Buck went crazy on Joe Girardi. So to that, I tip my cap to him and say, bravo, sir, bravo. I really am curious on what Girardi said specifically to him. Because obviously if Dickerson said something to Buck, it bothered him. Because he could have said, that's nothing, don't even worry about it. But he obviously said something like...
There was a trigger.
Yeah, there was a trigger there that basically he said, well, he said this. And Buck literally just went absolutely, you know, crazy on Girardi. And, you know, I think if it was another team, maybe Buck would have held it together. But the fact of the matter is, this is the Yankees. He's got a certain, I'm not sure if animosity is the word to me, but he does have a certain amount of feel for that the Yankees disrespected him by dismissing him and never giving him the due credit that he deserved.
Well, I mean, even fresher than that, the wound of Game 5 in the ALDS is probably still open.
Yeah, to a certain extent, but I think this is just a more of the aspect of the... historical context with Buck being the manager of the Yankees previously.
All right, and I do believe that Girardi and Buck are two managers that do, you know, they get along, they have a professional courtesy and everything like that, but this is the passion you want to see at this time of year. And Buck in the presser in the post game said, you know, oh, the guys don't need this. If they need this to get up for games, you know, we're in a lot more trouble than you think. And I know he has to say that publicly, but at the same time, I mean, is there any doubt that these guys wouldn't run through a brick wall for Buck Showalter?
No, I actually think back to last year when Buck got the 1,000th win of his career at Yankee Stadium, and you could tell how big of a deal it meant to the team as much as it meant to Buck, because they basically had Buck come onto the field and gave him applause. This team really respects Buck for everything that he does, for the ability to treat them like adults, but also let them still be kids at the same time. If someone feels like their coaching staff, whether it be Dickerson or Kirby or Buck, is being targeted, they're going to go out there and they're going to basically stand up for their guys.
And they stood up for Buck tonight in the best way possible, which was beating the Yankees.
Yep. Put a bird on it.
That's right.
So, big series against the Yankees, both with wild card implications, but every game now has wild card implications. But again,
this season's going to be wild.
Again, it's the Yankees. You can put separation in them. The other aspect is if you go ahead and take three or four from them, you could almost, in fact, bury their chances at the wild card, which would be nothing sweeter to me than to bury the Yankees' chances.
We will bury them.
But we'll see. Weekend goes into the Blue Jays. That's another series that, in my opinion, you've got to at least take two or three, but I would prefer a sweep. But that's just me. So with that, I don't really think of anything else besides go Orioles. Keep winning. Don't lose, because if you do, I'm going to cry.
All right. Well, with that, Baltimore and beyond, I think I will bid you a fond adieu.
Good night, Baltimore.